This is the TSN MMA show with Aaron Bronstetter and Bazooka Joe Valtellini.
After a highlight reel knockout, Marlon Moraes looks to add more ice to his trophy case as he might be the next contender in line at bantamweight. Dana White says the UFC is exploring getting rid of the early weigh-ins. Good idea, bad idea, we'll discuss. Yair Rodriguez mends fences and is back with the UFC, and he will fight Zabit at UFC 228. CM Punk back this weekend. Can he get a win in the UFC? And if he does, should we be impressed? We are joined in studio by the world's most dangerous man, the legend Ken Shamrock, and Eddie Alvarez joins the show as well. He'll be headlining UFC Fight Night in Calgary, Alberta on July 28th. Thanks to those listening on TSN Radio in Toronto and Ottawa or to the podcast. Please tell your friends, review the show, and subscribe. We always appreciate your support and feedback. So everybody who listens to the show that has sent us messages, we do appreciate it. Joe, you're back.
I'm back, yeah. I'm sure everybody missed me, hopefully.
Absolutely.
I'm back. We had a show in Birmingham, Glory 54. It was a night of decisions.
That's always fun for Glory.
It's a long night for me, too. Yeah. But, I mean, our show before in France, we had spectacular knockouts. Our young Thai fighter in France made it on the Sports Center top 10.
Yeah, easy so, there. Watch what you're saying. We got to censor that.
I know. My mistake. then all of a sudden, this show was all decisions. I even called three of the underfights decisions as well. So I called, 14 fights and all decisions.
Wow, all decisions?
14? Oh, sorry, there was one no contest from an accidental headbutt that ended up being ruled
out. That's hardly
a
finish, but it's still inside the distance.
But seriously, it was a long night for me.
That is a long night. Wow.
Long night.
So does the broadcast just go on and on and on?
We just keep going, and it's hard. Like, when we don't have those excitements, we're waiting to get excited. Like, I'm sitting here waiting. Grisham's there waiting. We're like, give me something to scream about. I want to yell. I want to get excited. And just, no.
That's brutal. Were there at least some fights that were really fun to watch?
Our Canadian Glory fighter, Josh Johnson, did well. He had a rematch against Chris Baia. He ended up getting a win, so he's close to another title shot, so good for Canada. Main event, Verhoeven defended his title. It was an okay fight. I mean, what we expected, but Rico got a decision win. Our welterweight champ, Haruk Gagorian, ended up defending against Russian Alim Nabiev, but good fights. I'm not going to say amazing, but they were okay, but long. You need some finishes in Glory. And we pride ourselves on being the, 50% almost knockout ratio in all our fights, and then boom, nothing.
When you see the welterweights fight, does it remind you of your career?
Oh, yeah. It stresses me out because I'm like, oh, man, I'd destroy everybody. That's what's in my head.
You look leaner, by the way.
I'm trying a little bit.
Yeah.
I have that Sicily trip coming up, so I'm trying to intermittent fast a little bit more.
I've heard about that, yeah. And George St. Pierre was talking about intermittent fasting, but you look like you're thinner. I'm trying a little bit.
And I just came from the gym, and I had a nice sauna session, maybe sucked the water
out. I'm always sizing you up. I used to be a guess your weight guy at Canada's Wonderland, so I can guess people's weight right away.
I'd be good at that. I think fighters would be amazing at that.
Yeah, guess your weight?
Yeah.
If you need a good job that pays you, $14 an hour?
That's it.
Why not?
I feel like I could do it.
Stand out in the sun?
I feel I can do it.
Yeah, I used to love doing it as a kid. I was really good at it.
Oh, I didn't know. I thought you were just joking.
No, when I was 17, I was working at Canada's Wonderland.
I thought that was seriously a joke.
No joke. Guess your age, guess your weight.
So how did it work, though? Like, if you suck at it, you're giving away all the prizes.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. Like, there's no real assessment system, it seems, with how well you do. It's just I was happened to be good at it.
But there's no scam to it? You know how all the different games have all those carnival tricks? And
there's one that's like guess your month, and the odds are kind of stacked against you because you have to be within 3 months, but there's no real way to guess someone's month. Yeah. There's no eye test for guessing the month.
And usually how close do you have to be with the weight?
Weight is 3 pounds.
That seems impossible, man. Like
I was 3 pounds either way, so it's 6 pounds.
Okay.
So I can be three over, three under. And I was good.
I feel like no one would guess my weight.
Age is 2 years.
I got to go. Next time I go to a carnival, I'm going to go and I'll bring it on the show.
What do you think they'll guess?
I think I look lighter than I actually am because I think people don't take into account my legs because I have big, strong legs.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. I'm curious.
Should I try sizing you up and guessing right now? And see
I know
how
what
I
weigh. Yeah, go for it.
All right. Stand up for a second.
All right. But you kind of know what I weigh, though, no?
A little bit. We talk about it every now and then. All right, so you're sitting right now at around, I've got 3 pounds, 202 pounds.
Yeah, that was 200 this morning.
Oh, there you
go. Yeah, but
look
you know I'm around that. That's kind of cheated.
You're going to have to go to Milk Can Toss if you win a prize.
We got
to
bring somebody else in from the office to see.
Go grab somebody.
Yeah,
go grab somebody. We'll
that's impressive, though.
I actually did it with the radio guys last week. We were talking about it. Somehow came up.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Yeah, I didn't do too well. There was one guy, he gets like 215, it was 240. All right, so
that's funny.
Speaking of weight, the UFC is thinking of getting rid of the early weigh-ins. According to Dana White, he was on UFC Uncensored. Oh, sorry, UFC
Unfiltered.
Unfiltered. Yeah. With, I don't know, I had a brain fart there, with Matt Serra and Mr. Norton, and they had a good time talking about that and asked him about all the complications they've had with the early weigh-ins, because they've had a huge amount of people miss weight for the early weigh-ins compared to what they used to have at the regular, like the ceremonial weigh-ins now, 4 o'clock weigh-ins. Those used to be the official weigh-ins, and they had a lot less people missing weight. Now they've got a lot more. So a lot of the fighters are complaining that they have to get out of bed and start cutting right away.
A little bit earlier.
Yeah. So Dana White says they're looking at getting rid of it. What do you think?
I mean, I just think regardless of the time, it's the fighter's responsibility. I mean, I used to do one weight cut before the weigh-in. If I haven't at 5 p.m., I could cut most fighters. I'm just going to give an average, cut 10 pounds in 24 hours. I'm going to say that's the average. So usually if my weigh-in's at 4 o'clock, I was able to start my weight cut in the morning, and I was able to cut that pounds, to 4 o'clock. But now with the weigh-in earlier, guys just have to be a little bit smarter. Do half of the weight maybe before you go to bed and half in the morning. If I was still competing, I'd like the morning because I know I would make the weight. Getting up at whatever time, I would make the weight, and I have more recovery time. For me, I'd rather have longer time to replenish and recover, get my water back in, than to have to cut the weight.
Well, here's the problem, and this is, I sent a message out about it, basically that Dana White said that, and one guy that responded was Gerald Harris. And Gerald Harris said, essentially, that people need to be professional, make the weight in the morning. And I said, what do you think of Thursday night weigh-ins for the Saturday fights? And he says, I don't like it because I'm a very small middleweight, and if I'm facing somebody who's going to be able to put on a lot more weight, they're going to have a big size advantage. So there's a lot of the problem with all three of the scenarios, Thursday night, Friday morning, or Friday night, is they've all got big downsides. So Thursday, you've got a good upside with more time to rehydrate your brain and your body. But the downside is if you're not cutting that much weight and your opponent's cutting a lot of weight, they're going to have a big size advantage over you on fight night. Friday mornings, a lot of people are having problems getting out of bed, weighing in. You have between 9 and 12 or 9 and 11 to weigh in.
That's when you do that a little bit at night before, man.
Yeah,
there's ways to do it.
Just the problem is statistically, it's like a massive increase of people that are missing it. And then, of course, Friday at 4 o'clock, now you have less time to rehydrate your brain. And a lot of people are going to make, more people are going to make weight, which is good for the company and good for the cards because less are going to be compromised. So here's what I was thinking with all of that information. And day-in weigh-ins seem to be something that people don't like. They don't like the idea, at least the fighters.
The same day.
Don't like same-day weigh-ins.
No, no one's going to like it.
Yeah.
It's going to just be worse for all that whole brain problems and
these people
dehydration.
Are going to cut for that.
Yeah.
Even if they're fighting 2 hours later, they're going to cut. Because everybody's looking for a size advantage.
Mm-hmm.
So how about this? You tell me if you like this idea. It's Friday, 9 a.m. Ceremonial weigh-ins are at 4 p.m. Let these guys weigh in any time between then and four. Then and they can even step on the scale at the weigh-ins.
I like it.
Until the weigh-ins are over. Anytime from 9 a.m. until then. So if some people are very professional, they really want to get a good head start on their rehydration, they can. If some people don't like cutting in the morning and they want to cut later in the day, sure. You give them the option of when to do it. Now, the problem with this idea is if you're a member of the media, you're not going to want to sit around all day waiting for people to weigh in. And are people going to like trust that the commission has the best interest? You know, could
it's not about
people,
the media.
People are worried. Well, of course, it's not about the media.
Yeah.
But it's also about transparency, right? So, if people in the media don't want to sit around all day, are we going to trust that the commissions are going to do it in an above board fashion where they step on the scale and they weigh that, and people say, "Okay, so and so just weighed in at this amount." I'm thinking if I was in the media, I would sit around all day. I would do it. I mean, that's part of my job. That's why I'm there.
Yeah, and you get to meet the fighters, talk to the fighters. At that point, you can interact, see things. I really like that
idea.
No,
you're not allowed to talk to the fighters at the weigh-ins.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. It's just one of the rules that they have.
I guess because they're tired, they're dehydrated.
Yeah, you're just not supposed to interact with them. I mean, if I sat out in the hallway and talked to them, I don't know if anybody could stop me. But at the same time, that's just, I don't know.
I like it, though. I 100% like it. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah.
I think it's
a great idea. Then at 4 o'clock, they get back on the scale, and they read out the weight that they weighed earlier, or they just don't get on the scale. This person weighed in at 2 p.m. today, 171 pounds.
Yeah, no, I think that's the probably the best idea you can do. I don't like the idea also of having a cap, like we saw with that Darren Till and Wonderboy fight, where he said Till couldn't be over 188 pounds. I also don't like that because I think guys who cut a lot of weight and then they're not fully rehydrating to their full potential.
Yeah. It's
not healthy as well. So I don't like that idea either. But I heard Kat Zagano say when she was talking to Rogan, why can't we just have catch weights? If there's two people who are cutting weight, why can't we?
I totally agree.
Why can't we? What's so big against, if you're not fighting for a title, you're not in the top 10, I mean, why?
Well, here's the thing. I don't agree with pre-arranged catch weights, but I do think that if they said, like, for example, when they said Gilbert Burns was too big to start cutting weight, that's when you talk catch weight. If he gets there and he weighs, whatever, 192, then you can say to the opponent, listen, this guy's not going to make weight, or he's not going to be able to cut in a healthy fashion. Would you agree to a catch weight of this amount? And that fighter's probably going to say, well, yeah, I mean, it makes my life easier too. But I think that the issue with prearranged catch weights is, like, let's say you're a welterweight and you always fight at 175 because you're not fighting for the title. People are always going to say, that guy can't get a title fight because he keeps weighing 175.
Yeah. It does make it harder, but...
So that's I guess, what the argument would be against catch weights. Not that I'm personally against them, but I think that that's the argument people would make.
Or you would say outside of the top 10. You kind of register to a weight class where, say, like, I would register as a welterweight. But, hey, like, right now I'm 200 pounds. If I want to fight, say, you know, Kevin Lee, who... you know, is a bigger guy, and maybe we want to fight at 180. Okay,
yeah,
let's fight at 180.
Under middleweight, yeah.
Yeah, under that weight class, but within maybe a certain, like, I don't think it's a big deal. If both guys, like, I mean, if you have 2 hours left and you and your opponent are both struggling to cut the 5 pounds, be like, hey, man, let's just go in at 175.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a big problem either, unless it's a title fight or you're within the top
but,
so much
you know,
of a ranking.
Another idea is you just have it at 170. The fight's like it's you know scheduled to take place at 170, and then at the beginning of the week,
talk to the guy and be like,
yeah,
do you guys want to?
Yeah, do you guys
okay,
want to? Yeah, and then if the organization's. I do think that reflects badly on fighters, though. And the reason why I say that is because people will always say, now this person can't make 170. So,
yeah.
So it puts a little bit of a strike against them when it comes to title contendership.
Yeah, no, I hear it. But
I mean, if they're not ranked or whatever, it's really not that huge of a deal. Like, example,
we had
for example,
it a few
the Burns example, Burns and Aubin Mercier, neither guy was ranked at the time.
Yeah.
So if they said, okay, yeah, we'll do it at 180. Well, they're 155 or so. We'll do it at whatever, 165. Is it going to make that big of a difference? Not really.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's always going to be a problem. Whether adding more weight classes, people are just going to cut more weight to get to that other class.
There's also the flip side of it is you've got guys like Josh Emmett coming in, overweight, fighting Ricardo Lamas, beats Ricardo Lamas, and now suddenly he's top five. Like it's as if missing weight made, and same with Till. Till goes in, beats Wonderboy, he's number two now, and Wonderboy's number three, but he didn't fight as a welterweight.
Yeah.
So if you're going to be the number two welterweight and you just won your last fight, your biggest test of your career,
That's a huge point.
A welterweight,
big point.
Then why are you moving up in the rankings?
I've been hearing a lot of guys talking within the community saying it. People are looking at missing weight now as a form of cheating.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
it's an advantage, right? Like if this Darren Till and Wonderboy example, because it keeps bringing it up, like. You're not going to, in a month, even in a week, if you ask people who won the fight, you're not going to remember that Darren Till missed the weight.
Yeah.
You're going to look at his record, 5 years down the road. You're not going to know he missed weight. So for him, he would give someone all of his purse. What's 20% of your purse? I'd rather have a win on my record and miss weight and then still have a dominant, win in my victory,
yeah.
In my win column.
Yeah. I think win bonuses need to start playing a factor because I think I said this to John Pollock last week on the show. So... Thompson, let's say Thompson was making 150 and 150. He gets 30% of Till's purse. Let's say Till's purse is $80,000.
And I think it's of the show money, right? Not
yeah,
of the
of
total?
Yeah, of the show money. So let's say he gets 30% of $80,000, so he gets $24,000. So instead of making a potential $300,000 if it's a level playing field and they're both the same weight, now he's made $175,000.
Yeah.
So it would be more advantageous for him for Till to completely dehydrate himself to make that 170 pounds or say I'm not going to fight him because there's just not enough. But then again, now you're going against the organization, the promotion, right? And the promotion wants that fight to happen. It's in Liverpool.
Yeah.
And really, Stephen Thompson's a class guy. He had no intention of not fighting him.
But I mean, it's just, it's a difficult topic, man. Like,
there's no right answer.
There's no right answer to it. And I mean, it sucks for the guy who, is accepting the fight because he doesn't want to let people down. So he's put in a situation, I was like, well, the whole world wants to see this fight. So now the guy who actually was the professional one to make weight is thrown in an awkward situation if he wants to take the fight or not.
Yeah, and the other thing I said that somebody refuted, somebody who's, has really good credentials when it comes to drug testing and USADA, DimSpace, by the way, if you want to follow him on Twitter, he's very, very well-versed when it comes to USADA and testing and all that. I said, why doesn't USADA just weigh these guys? Why don't they just bring a scale with them and weigh them? And if their walk-around weight is more than 15% of their weight class, then they get a warning. And then if it happens again, now you have to move up a weight class for your next fight.
Yeah, I mean, some guys are better at cutting weight than others. Some people can do it more. I mean, some people have more fat on them that they can lose that weight. Like, I can be, right now, if I really wanted to, I can be 215 and still fight at welterweight because I'm fat and chubby at that time. And once I get rid of my water, the fat, and then I'm a proper weight. Because some guys overblow up, right? And you can't really take that into account. You got to look more at, like, the muscle structure and, like, how much muscle mass they have. So, it's tough, but you got to look at the statistics on what the record is of guys who missed weight and they're winning. I mean, was it seven and one?
McCann lost.
So I think it's seven and one.
Yeah.
So I mean, there's got to be some sort of advantage there.
Absolutely.
It's speaking for itself.
What did you think of that Till fight, the Till and Wonderboy fight? How did you score that?
I don't know.
I know,
man.
We're 2 weeks separated.
I missed it, but I was leaning more towards Till winning just from his pressure. I mean, Wonderboy was fighting backwards a little too much.
People say that, though, but people say that pressure isn't part of the scoring criteria for judges.
I know. I mean, you got to look at he's moving, he's creating space, he's counterfighting well, but it just looked more dominant when you come forward. I mean, I can see how Wonderboy won 3-2, but I don't think it was 4-1 like the judges had. I think it was a lot closer than that.
Yeah. It's weird. People were making a big deal about it. And I'm thinking, well, nothing happened in the fight. Right?
Like, it's boring regardless.
There's not much that you can look at, right? Yeah. It's not even a matter of boring. It's a tactical fight. But if you're talking about 14 strikes per round combined.
I'm going to call it boring. I know a lot of people want to pretend like it's this super technical fight. They didn't commit to much. They didn't really go. You let me fight Wonder Boy, and you tell me if it's a boring fight. That's what I want people to say. I'll fight with the most technical fight you've ever seen, but it's going to be one of the more exciting fights you've seen.
Mm-hmm. So it could be both, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it could be both. It doesn't have to. I mean, I'm not looking for overexcitement, but I'm looking for a little bit more. But, Mike, did you see, if you listen back to my prediction on how Till's going to win, it was all match the stance, take the outside leg. He was following for a bit, but he just lacked that little bit of confidence. But it was all attacking, like I said, perfect strategy, but just didn't have that commitment to
it. A fight that's happening in your hometown too, right? Like, not a lot happens. Your opponent doesn't do much to you, at least not a lot of visible damage.
No one did it, in my eyes, whether it was a draw, whoever won, no one really put on that effort to really want to steal that fight.
So, until the fifth round. Till kind of turned it on in the fifth round. He knocked him down, but still not a whole lot. Still nothing crazy. Marlon Moraes this weekend gets a really, really impressive finish against Jimmy Rivera at the UFC in Utica. And I think it was 30 seconds. Just crazy for bantamweight. That guy's got big power, man. He knocked out Aljamain Sterling, a guy who nobody else has really even hurt in fights. Now he knocks out Jimmy Rivera, who's won 20 in a row. A lot of people are saying he should get the winner of Dillashaw and Garbrandt. But here's the problem. If Garbrandt wins, Sun Tzu is still ahead in the rankings, and Sun Tzu has beaten Moraes.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people are saying. Even Dominic Cruz has been sitting there.
Yeah, Dominic Cruz is sitting around, too.
So what about Marlon and Dominic?
Well, now you're talking.
Yeah.
Well, to me, I want to see Marlon and Lineker just for selfish reasons. I just think it would be an awesome fight. Yeah. Definitely. Like, Dominic's just been sitting around. Like, I don't know how, he wants to wait for that title shot, but how long can you wait around before the UFC is like, well, we can't just give you a title shot. You haven't beaten anybody since you lost.
Yeah.
It's been a long time. This is going to be the second time that both Dillashaw and Garbrandt have fought since Cruz lost to Garbrandt, right? So, and those guys haven't been particularly active either.
Yeah. It's been a little slow at the top there, I guess, those top three.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Dillashaw had a kid. Garbrandt was injured. Dominic keeps getting injured, too, because he was supposed to fight Rivera.
He can't have much left, Dominic. No, his body seems like
he's. I mean, he'll always be fun to watch. He'll always be good. But he's been injury-prone his whole career.
Yeah. No, we'll have to see. But I think Marlon Moraes is... That's it. He's the future.
Oh, man. He looks great. I mean, having that kind of power at bantamweight is phenomenal. And, I mean, Cody had it, too. Dillashaw has been a little bit more tactical, but he's got big power. And then you look at a guy like Lineker, who's got crazy power, too.
Yeah, that'll be a fun fight. But, yeah, you're right. Lineker and
Moraes, the fight Moraes, to make.
Yeah.
But Moraes wants to wait for a title shot now, too. All these guys like to sit around and wait for a title shot.
Yeah. I mean, it's the easiest way to do it. Yeah. I mean, take a chance. But I think, I don't know, even the Dominic Cruz, I don't mind, but...
I mean, if I'm the UFC, I'm calling Sun Tzu and I'm calling Moraes and saying, listen,
like, you guys,
well, like,
elimination.
No, not even that. It's just you've got to keep fighting. Like, you're not going to get a title shot from sitting around for like 7 months, 8 months. It's just not the way it works. Because what happens if Dillashaw wins? They want to make Dillashaw versus Demetrius.
Yeah.
Like, now what?
True.
Now maybe you put Moraes in a interim title fight. You could do that, but I don't know. And now DJ has come out and says he wants to fight at UFC 227, which is the same card that Dillashaw and Garbrandt's on. It's like, yeah. What happened? What's the deal here?
Who's his next contender?
They're saying it's Henry Cejudo, which I kind of agree with.
Yeah.
Cejudo's looked
pretty good. Cejudo's been on a nice little tear.
Yeah. Jose Torres made his debut this past week. One of the best flyweight prospects outside of the organization. He's the Titan FC flyweight and bantamweight champion. He looked... He wasn't winning that fight. He was losing, and then Jared Brooks. Did you see the highlight of the Jared Brooks? He went for the slam.
Is the slam? I heard of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Knocked himself out. Yeah.
That's happened a few times.
A few times in this sport. You get excited and you want a big slam, and then boom.
Yeah. Then Brooks tweets out after the fact, "I would beat you 9 out of 10 times, and the only other time that I wouldn't is if I body slammed. If I lost by knocking myself out.
Self TKO."
So this was pointed out on the co-main event podcast. This is the same thing that I was thinking when I saw the tweet was. So 10% of the time you're going to knock yourself out in the fight? That's your math?
Yeah, that's pretty high.
It's a pretty high percentage.
Yeah.
It's 1 out of every 10 times you're stepping in that octagon, you're somehow going to find a way to knock yourself out.
Oh, that's got to be terrible. Especially if you got a serious concussion from it, which you did. You knocked yourself out. I mean, you got to be pissed off.
Plus he took undefended blows afterwards because Torres got on top. And
like, I mean, there's always a funny time as a striker or a boxer. You'll uppercut yourself, which is pretty funny. But it's
nobody's
not like slamming your head.
Yeah.
Though. No, like
now, slamming your head, you lose. Like it happened to Matt Lindland in the past. We've seen it happen to guys where they land on their heads.
Wasn't that controversial celebration happen that way? Where remember that guy did a backflip off of his opponent?
Yeah.
And he was the same kind of situation. He knocked himself out. And then I think he did the backflip after that.
Really?
The guy who got knocked out, I'm pretty sure, slammed his own head into the canvas.
Okay.
Or hit his opponent's knee as he was falling down
that's
or
what
something.
It was. Yeah, he was going to shoot, and he went right into his opponent's knee.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate. Yeah. So CM Punk this week, I want to talk a little bit about this. What are your thoughts? Like, what do you think about this whole situation with him coming back, getting another fight, fighting Mike Jackson? He's on the main card now. Overeem and Blades are on the undercard. What do you think it means to the sport?
I don't know. I'm not overly against it. The more I think about it, I'm not overly against it. It's an exciting match. It's we're all want to watch it. So it has an entertainment value to it. And at the end of the day, it is an entertainment sport. I mean, if you look at some of the most exciting fights in MMA history, they came from Pride, right? Why did the Pride fights happen? Why did we all love Pride? It's because entertaining fights. Mm-hmm. We saw... You know, giants versus lightweights. We saw, you know, we saw so many crazy matches. Hung Man Choi versus 150-pound TIE fighter. We saw so many.
I'm glad you're bringing this
things.
All up because I've got my SportsCenter feature today. Watch SportsCenter. I did a feature on circus fights and how CM Punk and special attraction fights are a big part of the history of MMA.
Yeah. But look at us now. We're all involved in it. We all want to see it. We all want to watch it. We all want to talk about it. We had someone from a different sport interested in MMA, so we're bringing in a whole new demographics who are now getting interested in MMA, so more people are watching it. You're seeing some, and it just proves to everyone watching the sport that you can be a great athlete, but it's a little bit different to be a martial artist, and you can see that. So I think a lot of people aren't looking at the value of entertainment in the fight.
If he beats Mike Jackson, does it mean anything?
No. I don't think. What's it going to do? Nothing. For him, it's going to mean a lot because he accomplished something, came over all that adversity.
Would you give him another fight?
That's the question.
I mean, how long are we going to ride this train for?
Yeah.
Because as a one-off thing.
I think he should be. In my mind, I think he's done.
You think win or lose?
I don't.
I don't know. If he wins and he's enjoying it, like, why stop him from continuing to do it? You're still going to make money off of him? He's still an attraction?
Yeah.
He's got to win. It looks somewhat legit. I don't know.
Yeah. What do you think? What's your thoughts?
I mean, from a business standpoint, I understand it fully. But I also understand if a guy like Joe Benavidez, who's buried on Fight Pass for the card, is like, what's the deal here? Like, I've been the number one contender at both bantamweight and flyweight. I'm one of the best
entertainment.
Fighters.
Entertainment. What's fights more entertaining?
Well, I guess that depends on your definition of entertaining.
Yeah. Well, but let's look at it. Who do you think more people? Which fight will have more views?
Yeah, more people are watching CM Punk. More people are interested in CM Punk. It's a big story this week. It's going to be a big story for the rest of the week. And people, I think, will tune in exclusively to see how CM Punk does in the second fight.
Yeah, I agree. So, I mean, it does have that entertainment value that we're all absorbed in.
And I'm happy. Like, I like these entertaining fights. Like, if you were to put two celebrities on the card fighting each other, like, whatever, it's fun.
Yeah.
This sport can be fun. It's fine. That's the kind of the cool thing about one-on-one sports is, like, two people of a similar skill level can compete in it. Now, we did see in Bellator this year, Anna Juulatan and Heather Hardy, two high-level boxers, do MMA, and their striking kind of offset, and it became a grappling match, and it was one of the worst fights you'll ever see. It was awful.
Yeah.
It was just three rounds of brutal grappling, like really low. Like, listen, I can't grapple as well as they do, but I don't train all day. It was just three rounds of low, low-level grappling that was honestly a disgrace.
Yeah. Well,
so, you know, there's also that. Yeah. You also don't want to embarrass your sport. You know, like the UFC, what happens if CM Punk and Mike Jackson get into like some sort of grappling exchange? It just looks terrible for like three rounds. But now you're embarrassing the sport. It's
because Jackson's striking background, right? Yeah. I don't think he has
Jackson's not
boxing
be
and kickboxing,
him.
I believe. Yeah. I think he's got a few fights in each.
And that's what'll make it fun. It's like, you know, if a guy gets knocked out, people are interested. People want to watch. People want to see guys get knocked out.
Yeah. I just think regardless, it's just eyes on the sport. I don't think, as long as it's evenly matched, if you're putting, like that Mickey Gall is a little different. You saw him get smashed, but hopefully this is a more evenly matched fight. And who knows, man, it could be more exciting. I've seen more exciting amateur fights than I have pro fights in the UFC.
Yeah, it's just too evenly matched.
This fight
people.
Could be, if these guys go and they start scrapping and it ends up being a brawl, you know, we can say it's more exciting than Darren Till and Wonderboy, you know?
That's true.
You never know.
Yeah, I mean, who's to decide what is entertaining, right? Like, if it's too high level versus or too low level, if you're entertained, you're entertained, right?
Yeah. Like, it's always that debate with Demetrius Johnson fighting. They're like, why isn't he the big spectacle he is? It's entertainment value. You got to bring some sort of excitement, entertainment to the sport.
I don't even know if that's sport. It, though, because he is a very entertaining fighter. Yeah. Like
But his outside
that
isn't enough, maybe.
That's exactly it.
His outside just isn't enough to make him that super, superstar that he probably deserves to be.
And people gravitate towards stars for unknown reasons. Like, there's really, it's an intangible thing.
Yeah.
Because there aren't any stars really in the UFC right now that are really crossing over into the mainstream. There just aren't, other than Conor.
But even in the UFC, I'd be excited to see like some NFL players come in and fight some,
well,
you know.
That's happening in a contender series. We've got two former NFL players.
Like, why not?
One's got a 0-0 record.
Yeah. Fun, aggressive.
Big guys.
I don't mind. I mean, we all like the original UFC because we saw those circus fights.
Pride,
like you said, Pride, we all like those circus fights. I don't think it's that crazy of a big deal. I mean, if you know, why does, like we said on 2 weeks ago on the show, like Overeem and Blaydes going into the TSN portion of the card, which is good. He's getting more viewership.
I like it. It's on TSN.
Yeah, and it's more viewership. And he's getting more views.
Yeah, that's what I said. That's what I've been saying to people. It's like people think that these guys should be offended that they're not on the pay-per-view. They got more people watching them. They have to end their night earlier.
Yeah.
It doesn't make a difference. They don't get pay-per-view points anyways. Someone was like, oh, Overeem's going to lose pay-per-view points. Like, he wouldn't have been in the co-main event or even the main event. Guys don't get pay-per-view points unless, A, they're in the main event, from what I've heard. A, they're in the main event, sometimes the co-main, and the card has to do over 250,000 buys, which these days...
To get paid? They have to.
Yeah, they have to hit a certain number, from what I understand.
Yeah. That's interesting.
So if that's the case, like,
CM Punk
gonna get
will
points.
Sell tickets, yeah.
Yeah, well, CM Punk's not going to get points either. So CM Punk's just getting a big purse. He's getting 750,000, or at least that's what he got last time.
It's not a bad payday.
Yeah. Probably win or lose, he gets 750.
Yeah.
I don't think he probably doesn't have a fight bonus worked in, but who knows?
I mean, I think just people are giving too much attention on the rankings and how you are in the sport. I don't know. We got to remember it's an entertainment sport. You know, you got to entertain through skill in the ring, and you have to entertain outside now. You need a little bit of both.
It's the same people that are like, oh, they put uniforms in, and they're taking the fun out of the sport. It's like, let the sport have fun. Let's put fun stuff in.
Yeah.
It's a fun sport.
I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. I'm not overly against it. We're all talking about it. Every radio show is talking about it. It's probably one of the most talked about things that we've, you know, outside of probably Conor McGregor. But regardless.
But people forget, though, the UFC is not MLB or NFL. It's a promotion. It's not a sport.
Yeah.
Like, nobody says, I'm going to go compete in UFC, I'm going to go practice UFC in my basement. It's like, no. Mixed martial arts is the sport. The UFC is the promoter of said sport. Mm-hmm. And promotions need to promote things, whether they're big fights like, you know, Cormier and Stipe, or attractions, things that are going to get people in the seats. That's the way promotions work.
Yeah, even look at Colby Covington. He went from, I had never heard of Colby Covington before we had him on here. Then I started following him, and then he started talking all of his trash, and look at him now.
He's fighting for a title.
There's entertainment value. He brought some sort of entertainment to the sport, and he's capitalizing on it.
I can't wait to talk to him this week. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, he's.
I like Colby.
I'm curious, his comment about he has something for Joe Rogan to say. That's what I'm excited to see what he's got to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm interested. But exactly, he's got you interested.
I'm interested now, right? I'm watching just to hear his post-fight if he wins, you know?
Yeah, it's funny. You got one guy who's a former pro wrestler that wants to be taken seriously and one guy who's like a professional fighter that wants to be a pro wrestler.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a weird contrast. I think Robin Black's actually doing a feature on that this week that you can catch on SportsCenter later in the week. So Yair Rodriguez back with the UFC. Who knew?
Yeah.
Going to fight Zabit UFC 228 in September. He says it's in Las Vegas, but reports from Ariel Helwani say it might be in Dallas or Houston. Nothing's been confirmed yet. T-Mobile Arena is booked that night for Def Leppard. So unless they want to have Def Leppard open for the UFC, which probably won't happen.
But
years back, they've settled.
He got bullied into it, maybe.
Well, essentially, he had to meet with Sean. He had a meeting with Sean Shelby. Yeah. They kind of buried the hatchet, figured things out. The fight's signed, and now he's back. And Dana White's going to go meet with him.
Yeah, eventually the UFC will bully you. You're like, you take this fight, or you'll never fight again.
But again, they're a promotion. These guys are not unionized. They don't really have a whole lot of leverage.
I don't.
What can you do?
If I'm Yair Rodriguez, I don't love the fight. I don't love the fight.
Nobody's
as a fan,
as a
we all love the fight. We know we all love it as fans, but from his side, his coach, the Frankie Edgar situation before losing dominantly the way he did, it's not a great fight for him to try to continue to go.
Well, it's tough. George St. Pierre said something that really resonated with me when I heard him on Rogan's show. He said the belts don't really matter. Matchups matter. Like people think that the belt makes you the toughest guy in the world, but sometimes you'll match up better against number two than you will against number eight.
Absolutely.
It's just matchups. Like, Zabit versus Holloway would be a competitive fight. And Zabit's ranked, whatever, 14th or 15th.
Yeah.
Like, the ranking doesn't really matter. What matters is the matchup. Like, Covington versus RDA, for example. RDA has shown a lot more. He's got a bigger resume. But RDA has also shown, when he fought Khabib, that he can get taken down. He's susceptible to takedowns. So, Dos Anjos might be the better fighter than Covington. But in a matchup against Covington, one area of his game could be exposed.
Maybe being a southpaw, you know, maybe you're a great fighting orthodox, but when you have a southpaw fighter, you don't know what to do. The distance is different. The angles change. So maybe you're not as good fighting southpaws, and maybe number 10 is a southpaw, and that number 10 will beat you.
Yeah, or one guy's a really good wrestler, and you get taken down. Or one guy's good at submissions, and your submission defense isn't as good as the guy who's ranked number 3.
Yeah, that's the beauty. That's the crazy thing about MMA. There's so many different variables over, like, kickboxing. You have pressure fighters, movement fighters, good boxing, good kicking.
Yeah, technical strikers, power strikers.
But it's so many different, you know, elements to it. Wrestling, jiu-jitsu defense, you're attacking in jiu-jitsu, you're attacking on the feet, your distance. There's just so many different areas that you can be vulnerable to in MMA. It's crazy.
It's an interesting sport, this sport. And it's good that years back, I love watching Yair Rodriguez fight.
Yeah, it would have been a shame to lose him, but it's a crappy fight for him, but...
But so what? So what? So you lose.
Yeah, but I think from what I understood from his fight with Edgar, it got in his head a little bit. I think he got a little bit of concussion-based,
I spoke to him in Edmonton last year.
He's like, I think he talked about getting concussions and having some brain recovery issues from that fight. So he's probably a little hesitant to get hit.
Yeah.
And then you're getting thrown in one of the most dynamic strikers in MMA where he could spin kick you out of nowhere. And, you know, it's
so
just
Yair. Yair's one of the most dynamic strikers, right?
Yeah.
So that's what makes it an interesting fight, and I think that's why they wanted to make it. But at the same time, it could be a staring contest. Like, you could have two guys that are throwing all kinds of wild stuff and missing, completely missing. Yeah. So we'll see how it goes. But, so what if you lose? You win the next fight. You're right back in the conversation.
Yeah, maybe.
And, I mean, Yair, like you mentioned, I spoke to him back in Edmonton last year, and he said, I want to take some time off. I've moved to Team Alpha Male. It's a new camp.
You talk about injury-based or just, psychological?
Just wanted to wait. Yeah, I think he just wanted to get kind of he was moving to Sacramento. He wanted to stay with Team Alpha Male and learn from
them. Which
is
good for these guys. These guys, I don't know, man. In any combat sport, guys are forced to fight so quickly. You know, you have a good, amazing win or a loss, and you're like, okay, let's go back in. Like, I get that mentality, but win or lose, you need a proper time. You need time to... All learning happens outside of camp.
Yeah.
So let these guys learn. Let them develop. There's no rush, especially if they're making some good money. They don't have to fight every couple months. You know, let them take a break 2-3 times a year. I think 3 times max. You know, for a good payday, like, you don't need to fight more than that. You need to learn. You need to develop. You need to have time for your body to, you know, the inflammation in your joints, you know, the concussions in your head to take time. Guys rush it too much.
Then you have a situation like Darren Till. And like, Darren Till had, like, so much momentum after he beat Cowboy.
Yeah.
Then he had to take some time off for various reasons. He fights Thompson. It's a boring fight. And now what? Are people still excited about Darren Till? They're not as excited, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I don't think so.
So who knows?
Are you excited? Do you want to see him fight
next?
Yeah,
I want to see. I do, but I'm not. Mm-hmm. I'm not like when they said Thompson versus Till, I was like, that's a great fight. That could be a really fun one, and it disappointed.
Yeah.
So it
but
is
now,
what it is.
Would you talk as Till being, you know, title contention soon?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think he's a win away. I think if he beats like Kamaru Usman, which is a matchup that apparently has been talked about.
That should be the next one.
Yeah.
Then they could fight. Because then you have the interim fighting.
Woodley wants to fight in September.
So the winner of this main event will probably
have a tight turnaround, but, you know,
yeah,
depends on what happens in the fight. That's going to be a fun fight, Covington, Dos Anjos. I have no clue what's going to happen in that fight.
Yeah, I'm slightly leaning towards Dos Anjos.
I'm the other way. I'm slightly leaning Covington. But
based on the wrestling?
Yeah, I think he has the potential to just tire out Dos Anjos. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I feel like Dos Anjos has more ways to win.
Yeah,
but Covington might have
because of the striking. When he fought Maya, they showed some holes in his striking. But I don't think he's going to take that same approach, right? Because with Maya, you don't want to get to the ground. But I think RDA, his wrestling isn't as good as jiu-jitsu is good. So I think the wrestling of Colby could give him a hard time.
Yeah.
But I think the striking might be exposed in this one. I think RDA striking
striking should be far superior.
Yeah,
but at the same time. If it's always on the ground, then you have no worries about strike.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll be finding out soon.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll be finding out this weekend, UFC 225 in Chicago. On the script, it says UFC 203 for some reason. Scary weight cutting video of Darren Till. Did you get a chance to watch that?
No, I haven't seen that.
Well, that's what's kind of sparked this whole weight cutting debate coming back into fruition. Apparently, he lost his vision while he was cutting weight and like.
Yeah.
That's scary stuff. We talked about that off the top of the show. We do have a special guest in studio. I had a chance to catch up earlier in the week with Ken Shamrock, the world's most dangerous man. He's able to join us in studio. It was a fun conversation with him. Talk about the state of MMA today and about his legacy on the sport. And he joins us right now on the TSN MMA show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to introduce this week's guest.
I'm with a man who needs no introduction, but for introduction's sake, we'll call him the world's most dangerous man. It's Ken Shamrock joining us in studio. How are you, Ken?
I'm doing well, man. Thanks for having me.
Among the world's most dangerous men, where do you rank right now? Are you still number one in your books?
No way. I like to pretend every now and then.
Well, we'll just say you're still in the top 1%. How's that?
I appreciate that.
Well, so you're in town right now here in Toronto because you're making the rounds in Ontario, doing a whole tour, spoken word tour, meet and greet with fans, Q&A. What can fans expect if they come out and visit Ken Shamrock? What kind of stories are they going to hear?
Well, they're going to hear ones that they've never heard before. Because why? Because they're going to ask the questions. Whatever questions they want to ask me, I answer them. So it's a really unique situation where you get to mingle with the fans and that they're going to get to ask me questions that they've been want to ask me for years. Maybe they've watched me fight and there was a question they wanted to answer, but nobody could answer it for them but me. So this is a great opportunity to really mingle with them, really be able to talk with them, have fun with them, tell them stories, and be able to laugh and even some seriousness to it, some motivational stuff. So it's just a lot there. If you show up, I guarantee you're going to be entertained.
So it's kind of an open forum. You know, you get there, you say, anybody have any questions, and you go from there?
Well, no, I kind of open up a little bit about who I was, where I came from, some of the obstacles I had to overcome to become who I am today. And one of the things I get from being able to open up like that, and some of the things, the feedback that I got was that people were very motivated from what I was able to speak and tell and talk with them about of where I come from and some of the obstacles that I had. They were very motivated. But at the end of it, we were laughing, we were having fun. They were able to ask the questions they wanted, and it was really a well-rounded and fun time.
In terms of obstacles, you've had many. I mean, when you were growing up, you were essentially on your own up until you were adopted by Bob Shamrock.
Yeah, like I said, there was a lot of ups and downs for me, a lot of different situations that I think in most people's lives would be, you know, drastically changing the way that they want to live or the things that they wanted to do. And so I really be able to talk about those things and be able to have people who are going through whatever situations they're going through be able to think, well, wait a minute. Yeah, that's true. That's absolutely right. So if he can do it, I can do it.
Absolutely. So when it comes to what you're up to now, walk me through what the life of Ken Shamrock is like right now.
Well, right now I get up at 7 in the morning, I train, work out, get sore, get up, go eat, then we go and do radio stations, and then we go do a Q&A. That's been my life in the last 2 days.
So you fought pretty recently. You fought against Hoist Gracie. How old were you when you fought Hoist the second time around? Or the most recent time?
Yeah, the most recent I was 51.
51.
51, and
he won by illegal groin strike?
Yeah, you imagine those two words going together. He won by illegal groin strike. They don't go together.
No, they don't. They would have, if USC won back in the day, he could have won in that fashion. But in this day and age, he cannot.
Yeah, but if that was the case, I would not have been tied up with him. See, that's the whole point. Yeah. It's a different style of fighting today. Like, if that was the way it was then, I'm not standing in front of him grabbing his head because I know that's a shot that can happen.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was watching that and I thought, it's kind of ironic that Ken started back in the day where you were allowed to do that. Now you're not allowed to do that, and Hoist wins, I guess, his first knockout victory, TKO victory. I imagine you were pretty upset with how that went down.
Yeah, I was. I was disappointed. I think more than anything, not so angry, although I probably should have been, but I think I was more disappointed, heartbroken, because I felt like there was an opportunity there to really seal a legacy for the fans to be able to say, man, that was a great legacy, and always be able to remember the fights and the different things that happened, you know, with the shoes being taken away and him putting the time in and getting beat up and just all those little controversial things. And I thought, man, this is a great opportunity to put all that to bed, to put a period at the end of this sentence, and then to have it end like that. It was almost like now they just basically left this legacy, this feud, without a finish, and it's, for me, it was very disappointing, for not only for myself but for the fans.
Would you do it again?
Oh, in a heartbeat. Yeah, I tried to get it done again, but you know, the Hoist doesn't want any part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess he walks away with a victory, right? So he doesn't have as much to gain, I guess. But it's still an inspiration to see you doing that at that age. And I know recently Chuck Liddell said he was going to come out of retirement. He's 48 years old, likely going to fight Tito Ortiz. They're saying at the end of the year that Oscar De La Hoya is going to put on. What are your thoughts on that whole situation?
I love it. I mean, like I said, you're looking at two legends. Both of them have stepped away from fighting, so it's not like they're fighting somebody like I did with Tito when I was, you know, late 40s and I had to come back in and fight somebody who was in his prime. These guys are both stepped away from fighting. They both are same age. And so I think it's a really good matchup. I like it. I love it for the fans because I know the fans want to see it. I want to see it. And I think it's great. I think that more of these things should be happening. If they're fit enough to step in a ring and fight and be able to have fun doing it, which is what they're doing because they're not competing for rankings, and have fun doing it, and the fight makes sense, then by all means, do it.
Yeah, and people are saying Chuck shouldn't be getting back in there. We saw how his last fights end. But as you mentioned, it's an older guy he's fighting. And we see Vitor Belfort just retired from the UFC. He wants to come up with kind of a legend circuit of MMA. That's kind of been an idea of his. I imagine it's an idea you've probably had for years. But when you look at that sort of situation, again, it would be older guys versus older guys. Belfort's saying he thinks the rules should be modified in a sense that it would be advantageous to the health of the older fighters. What do you think of something along those lines?
Well, I would never do anything like that as far as, you know, making a Legends event because there's room for these fights on UFC where guys can go in and actually be honored for what they've done in that organization and fight guys that make sense, even in Bellator, you know, it's there. But to try to create a league like that, who knows? But basically what you're saying is that we've got a league for old guys and that if you want to watch these guys that are not so much talented anymore and you want to watch five fights like that, come on down. I just don't think you're going to be able to put that many fights on a card and say, hey, this is a Legends thing, and all these guys are past their prime, and we're going to put five of them on. I don't know how that's going to work, but I do love the idea that UFC and Bellator will bring back some of these guys that are still fit and in shape and be able to fight one another. I like that. I'm just not sure if you could watch four of them.
Yeah, I mean, you could call it League of Legends. That might be taken, though. So we do have the UFC being sold in recent years to WME, or I guess it's called Endeavor as of now. What do you think of the direction of the UFC, what it's like right now?
Well, and listen, I'm just, like I said, anytime you ask me, I'm pretty honest about what I feel that doesn't make it right. But I just feel it's flat right now. Like, it seems like everybody's walking the same line. You know, once Conor McGregor was out of there, it seemed like everybody's uniformed, and no pun intended, but it seems like everybody's kind of having to follow the same script. And for me, what made MMA so fun and No Holds Barred so fun was that we had different characters that showed up for weigh-ins and showed up on the social media. And it made it interesting on the different fights that you were going to watch. Now, there's none of that. There's nobody pushing the envelope. There's nobody saying, hey, watch my fight because I'm going to tear this guy's head off because he did this or because he did that or for whatever reason it is. But it just seems like it's so uniform now that none of these guys and none of their characters are being showcased.
And how would you showcase them? What do you think could change in that regard?
Well, first of all, I think you stop uniforming them. You stop saying, hey, you can't do this and don't do this. I think these guys are old enough to understand how an adult is supposed to behave, how a professional athlete's supposed to behave. And if they don't, then you fine them. But you don't go in and say, hey, we're going to control you. We're going to make sure that you stay in line. That's, in my opinion, that is not the organization's responsibility. And I think you take away these different types of exciting fights by doing that. Because I know with myself, I was always pushing the envelope. I was always getting in somebody's face. I was always causing something to happen. And if I was in today's UFC, they wouldn't allow me to do it. They would say, you can't do that. You can't do that. But that's what sold tickets.
I think you hit the nail on the head when it comes to the weigh-ins. Angela Hill, who's part of the UFC, wanted to dress up as Black Panther. They said no. A lot of these guys can't wear face paint. The weigh-in was really the time where you could show your personality, do something a little bit different. Now, I know that they have the Reebok deal, and I'm not saying you throw the Reebok deal out the window, but I'm saying a little bit of leniency would help. You know, they can still walk out with Reebok apparel or have some sort of Reebok apparel as part of their weigh-ins, but how else can you show that personality? How else can you stand out? And the weigh-ins are the day before the fight. That's when you can really build the most buzz for the fight during fight week. None of these guys can do that, or girls.
Yeah, and it's a shame, too. I mean, I would love to see somebody go out in Black Panther, you know. I'd love to see somebody come out there in a body paint, you know. Listen, this is what it's not about, and unfortunately, a lot of people may not understand this, but it ain't about the fight. It's about the journey and the entertainment going into the fight, because there's four or five fights on the card. Why should I watch your fight? Why should I watch your fight? Tell me why. And I think that's where the storylines, that's where the characters come in when people go, I'm going to watch that fight. And right now, I think that they're stopping them from doing that, and it's hurting their ratings because people are not interested in watching just fights.
Well, a colleague of mine, Robin Black, he says that there's no such thing as casual fans anymore. People are always invested now. I'll watch every UFC event because I just love the sport and I love watching all of the different fights. I'll watch every Bellator event, you know, everything. I'll run the gamut. Whatever's on, I will watch it because I love it. But if I'm, you know, a casual fan sitting at home, he says there's no such thing as a casual fan. I kind of disagree. I think that casual fans are there. They just need a reason to watch.
Yeah, and they are. And I think your bigger percentages are your casual fans. That's where the bigger market is. And a lot of people, because of so many things that you can do during your day or during your evening, you've got to make it like, oh, that's why I want to watch it. Oh, yeah, this guy did this at weigh-ins, or this guy did that at weigh-ins. I got to watch this, man. This guy wants to get – he really wants to get this guy. So there's – like I said, there has to be a hook to be able to get the casual fan back interested again. Because if you look at it right now, I mean, the writing's on the wall. They had the lowest TV ratings since before I came back when I wasn't there. And that's what, 15 years ago, the lowest ratings. That's got to tell you something. They need to make some changes, and they need to start going back to what made it exciting.
Well, cord cutting is probably a part of that as well, but I do hear what you're saying. It definitely plays a factor, and they are, I guess, trying to enter the digital age with this new deal with the ESPN. They're going to have a strictly digital rights deal, at least in America, which is an interesting approach. Trying to see how much time we have left here. We don't have too much time, but so I do want to get to the fact that you will be in Toronto It's this Sunday night, 7 p.m. at Rec Room in downtown Toronto, as well as many other cities along the way. You're going to be in Montreal this week, Ottawa this week. I'm trying to remember them all. There's a lot of them. You're going to be with Brockville, one of them? Brockville this week. Do you know any other, others off the top of your head? Kingston is coming up soon.
Well, we did Kitchener. We did Waterloo.
Coburg coming up.
Yes.
Trying to remember all of them. I'm testing this photographic memory of mine.
St. Catharines.
St. Catharines, right? I went to university there. Great city.
Yeah.
So really, if you want to see Ken, you can. He's easy to find. If you're anywhere in Ontario, he will be in driving range, and you should absolutely go if you want to pick the brain of a legend. I could sit here all day and do it, but we do have a schedule to stick to, and I do appreciate your time, Ken. It's a pleasure having you in studio, and always great to sit down with some of the legends of the sport and find out what's on their mind.
Yeah, hey, listen, I appreciate the time, and I'm the reason why I do this, and I think it's important that fans know this, is that, you know, through my career, I always thought the fans were important to me. They really were, especially even when I was in the ring, being able to hear them, be able to scream and yell and chant. It was big to me. And a lot of fighters say, I tune that out. I go in, I do my business. But for me, the fans played a big role in me being able to go out there and do my best. I wanted to make sure when I left the ring that the fans were satisfied with what I did. And if they weren't, the next time I went back out, I want to make sure they were. So during the time I was in the ring, I got to do that. But now my thing is to be able to go out there like I'm doing now and be able to hear the stories about the fans and what I meant to them in their lives. But at the same time, I want to let them know what they meant to me during the time that I was training and getting ready for fights and the importance to me that they were entertained and that they had a good time when I did fight.
Absolutely. And again, this week, if you're in Ontario anywhere, you can find Ken Shamrock and ask him all kinds of different questions, just like I have in the last 15 minutes that I've had the privilege of speaking with you with. And I really appreciate your time, Ken. Thanks for stopping by.
Hey, appreciate it. You guys want to get a hold of me or reach me on my social media sites, it's at Shamrock Ken. My website is kenshamrock.com. Come check it out. Find out what I'm up to.
Are you on Instagram?
I am. I'm on Instagram. What is the one on Instagram? Do you remember?
Look up Ken Shamrock on Instagram.
Yeah, but see, kenshamrock.com is my website. It's got all my social media sites on there. If you want to get with your Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, you name it, it's on there. You want to get hold of me, you can get it on my Facebook, kenshamrock.com.
And if you're booking a public speaking engagement, you can find it there as well.
Amen.
All right, thanks, Ken.
Thank you.
That was Ken Shamrock. Interesting stuff from him on the state of the sport. He really wants to see the entertainment factor come back into sports. He thinks that there's a little bit too much of a uniformity with the UFC.
Yeah.
He thinks that at weigh-ins, he wants to see more personality come out. He wants people to discuss certain people, but he feels like it's being kind of pushed down by the organization.
Even like walkouts. Like the UFC walkout isn't fun anymore.
No, it's not.
Like when you watch a Glory event, it's cool to me because it's like they're on an elevated stage and the guy's walking by themselves. So Glory looks at it as, why do you need the corners with the buckets and the towels and everyone's walking? It looks messy. We don't care about those people. Put them in the corner. Let's just see the fighter. When you watch a boxing event, you'll see Floyd Mayweather have something exciting. If you watch old K-1, is probably the number one, old Japan fights. They would come out in costume. Yeah. They would come out dancing. They would come out in something different. Where's the walkout?
It's the pageantry.
Man?
That's the thing that I feel
that
is
excitement?
Most missing from the UFC is the pageantry.
Yeah, man. Get the guys doing stuff.
This Reebok deal, the problem with it is they've offered them too much. Having them wear Reeboks, strictly Reeboks at the weigh-ins, having them wear Reeboks on the walkouts, they don't need to have banners. They don't need to have sponsors on their shorts, whatever. That you can take that out. You can let them have, you know, if you want to give them just Reebok in the cage, that's fine.
Yeah.
But let them come out with some energy, some fireworks, some big screens, like other organizations.
Yeah, like look at Angela Hill. Like every time she comes out, she's in some costume or
and
she's
they don't
in
let
some
her do
character.
It anymore.
I know. But when she was Invicta, it was the best.
It was
she went
awesome.
As Dalsim. She's come as like so many different cool things. We used to see Mayhem Miller come out with some cool walkouts.
Yeah.
What's the guy from
Tom
The
Lauder.
Caveman? The Caveman.
Oh, David Rickles.
He did the mannequin challenge coming out one time where the whole arena just stopped quiet. He comes out with fun as a caveman. Lawler, you said, came
Tom
out as
Lauder.
Dan Severn.
He did it several guys.
Yeah, came out in like
Gordon,
the little
Gordeau and
yeah. Why not? Mm-hmm. Like that's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's entertainment. Like the Chinese, the Japanese, the Asian culture values that a lot. But here in North America, man, we lost it.
Yeah, that's the problem. I think that we need to get more of that back. Like, it's just, to me, you're going to just get on more shows. You'll be on, oh, look on SportsCenter today.
Dance.
Some guy came out in a weird costume. Yeah, like, check it out. It's our must-see moments.
I don't know. Come out. Remember in boxing, guys used to come out on those thrones and people would carry them and like...
Just, that's what you need.
Even when Anthony Joshua fights in boxing and he's in the UK, like they have huge fireworks and spectacles. And my goal, like when I first started fighting, my dream was like, I want to fight in Japan. And my one requirement for my walkout is I want the fireworks. Mm-hmm. I just want, I want fireworks shooting behind me.
Yeah, gets you hyped
up. Yeah, and I got that. So it was one of my bucket list checks. But they stopped doing that with Glory too. But at least we have like the nice long walkout. We have
I like the long walkouts. Yeah. I think that's another thing that's missing from the UFC is like the walkouts have become stale. It's a lot of it.
And
become...
it's ground like the elevated. It needs something elevated and high. Let the fighter stand. Like Bellator's elevated stage looks good. Glory's kickboxing, you know, the elevated walkout is really nice.
Yeah, I agree with you.
They need something.
And Bellator has good walkouts also. That's the one thing that I feel is really lacking in terms of selling the sport, in terms of getting that kind of mainstream appeal. Is the kind of pageantry that goes into it. You remember Pride? They used to have the guy in the sumo outfit banging on the cymbals.
Yeah, so fun.
A whole stage of people singing and stuff like that. And they do a lot of stuff like that in Poland also. And they have the night fights in Russia with the guys dressed as knights fighting on the...
Like
that kind of stuff. It's the kind of things that people are like, wow, did you see that?
Yeah, something...
We have like the Mighty Whiz Bar with Demetrius Johnson with that flying armbar finish. That's one of those did you see that moments.
Yeah.
And the UFC just needs more of those. They need more stuff like that. And Covington could come out in like the rivals of like the Chicago Cubs and the like St. Louis Cardinals uniforms.
Yeah,
just to annoy people.
Anything.
And people would think it was funny, you know, and good, but he can't do it. He's handcuffed from doing that. And I think that that's a big issue.
Yeah, and fighters like doing it. They want to be creative. I guarantee you, most of the fighters that you watch, when you visualize something about a fight, you always visualize the walkout, that feeling. And it's just a special moment. I think, you know, the UFC and fighters should really honor and really respect that time.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it just gives guys another way of marketing themselves also. If you're going to take away their sponsorships... let them market themselves in another way.
What was it like? Mayhem Miller had the masks. He had the KFC bucket with the sparklers in his hair. Like he had girls dancing out with him, and like it's fun. I'm still talking about it. How many years later?
It's like a
decade
later. Yeah.
And we're still talking about it. So why not?
Yeah, let's make it happen. I don't know if it's gonna. I mean, the Reebok deal goes to 2021. Like we got 3 years left of this thing. Yeah. 4 years, I guess. 18, 19, 20. Yeah, 21. 4 years. They just gotta. I feel like they need to renegotiate that deal. I really do. I think that would make a big difference.
Aren't they allowing now a little bit of customized work with the uniform? At least
not really.
Some
you can choose
creative
colors. Like that's all. It's still the same.
I thought
uniforms.
There was a little bit more.
You can choose your shorts. You can choose your whatever.
Whether
your
you want spandex, long color, but
shorts. Yeah, it's not still. It's not a whole lot. I will say Reebok's doing a better job of getting like the shirts, the specialized shirts. Like they had those Sean O'Malley tie-dye shirts,
which is good. Let the guys make money outside of the camp, right?
Yeah.
Like Reebok and have some of those shirts. Let guys get a percentage market. That's how you get guys extra money, right?
And you also get people walking around wearing shirts of people. And, and you can market them as personalities.
Like, I don't think I've ever seen anyone walk with one of those, you know.
The fight kits?
The fight kits.
I've seen them every now and then, but really? I'm at a lot of UFC events.
Yeah, I have not seen anyone. And when I do see someone with it, I'm more of like, oh, they know so-and-so. Or, or maybe they cornered so-and-so. Like,
yeah, I
don't assume that they buy it.
And I walked up to the guy, goes, yeah, are you in this guy's corner this weekend? He's like, yeah. It was like some random guy, some random UFC fighter. He's got the fight kit.
Or he's lying to you.
Yeah, he's just a big fan.
Yeah, that's it.
He's a big fan of Dan Ige or Mike Santiago. He's just wearing their jerseys around. Not to rip those guys. You know, anybody who's in the UFC is a professional. So
absolutely.
I shouldn't take shots at any of these guys. UFC 225, Whitaker versus Romero 2. It's in Chicago this weekend. So let's take a look at this card from top to bottom. So Whitaker, Romero 2. Now, you look at the odds here, and Romero is a 2-1 underdog. And I think Romero as a 2-1 underdog against anybody in the world is probably good value. But what do you think?
I think I agree with Whitaker being the favorite.
But that big? I mean, Whitaker did win that fight with an injury. He got injured
in
the first.
Yeah, his knee was banged up from that, like, the knee side kick just above the knee. I just think his striking is too good. I don't know. I think Romero's, again, obviously dangerous, but I think Whitaker has so many more tools, longer, better striking ability. His kicking ability is nicer.
Way younger.
Yeah, younger. I like Whitaker. Mm-hmm. You don't think it should be that big of a...
I just don't think it should be that close. I think Romero has a good shot of winning this fight.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't, like, obviously I think Whitaker should be the favorite. I think that Whitaker won the last fight. He did it while he was injured. He's not getting, you know, Romero's gotten significantly older, I guess, probably, is it a year now? Yeah, about a year older. So, and that matters when you're 40.
Yeah.
So...
As a striker, though, I can tell you that Whitaker's striking coach, like, I don't know him, but I was watching the Countdown show, and his coaching, you can tell he comes from a really good striking background. Like, because you can tell with someone, the way he was talking to Whitaker and the terms he was using, they fight both stances. And one of the parts is like, okay, now do the same combination from your opposite stance. That's intelligent fighting. You know his striking coach really has him fighting both ways, good with distance. I saw the drilling. So I think he's – I don't know the guy, but he's in good hands based on his striking from what I was hearing from his corner.
Yeah,
so.
That's good because he's out in Australia and it's really growing there at the UFC. I mean, you've got Taito Iwasa on this card as well.
They've always had a strong Muay Thai community. Like, New Zealand has always really been good because they had John Wayne Parr, Nathan, Carnage, Corbett. So, like, I mean, there's so many good Australians. They have a big scene out there. So, I mean, their Muay Thai has always been strong.
Yeah, and now other areas of their game are all getting better, too. So, You got Tyson Pedro. I think he's got a big fight ahead of him soon, too.
Yep.
So, a lot of these guys from Australia and girls are – and Megan Anderson's on the card as well. So, you've got a lot of up-and-comers from Australia. This might be the biggest night in the history of Australian MMA. You've got Tuivasa on the card. You've got Anderson. You've got Whitaker in the main event. I mean, there's a lot for them to look forward to.
So who are you picking for Whitaker Romero?
I would go with Whitaker. I think from a pure pick, like if I'm picking, I'd say Whitaker.
Yeah. You think Romero can get the takedown? Probably a few.
Yeah, maybe one or two.
One or two.
Yeah, and Romero could finish him. When Romero hits hard, you know, all it takes is one from Romero. So yeah.
I think Romero's first two rounds, again, similar kind of fight from last time. I think his first few rounds are going to be really strong, but I think the last three, Whitaker's just going to come in and pick him apart.
Well, we'll see how it goes, and we've got the co-main event, Colby Covington, Rafael Dos Anjos. Like I said, I think Dos Anjos has more ways to win, but I think Covington's got the better way to win.
Yeah, I'm leaning towards Dos Anjos, but let's see. This is Colby's chance to show... You know, shine. Show us what you got.
It's weird. It's a coin flip fight, but I don't think that it's going to look like a close fight. I think it's going to be one-sided in either direction.
It's a pick 'em, right? I mean, which is even money whichever way you go. So basically on odds, it's 50-50. But I don't know. I think Dos Anjos, his octagon experience, his ability to strike and have good jiu-jitsu, I think it should be a slight advantage for Dos Anjos.
This might seem like an obvious statement, but I'll explain what I mean. Whoever comes out winning this fight is going to look good. And the reason I say that is I think that the person that wins this fight is going to do so in kind of a dominant fashion. I think that they're just going to look impressive.
I think it's going to be a good fight because both of these guys fight. Mm-hmm. These guys aren't they'll leave it in the octagon. These guys will
Romero
leave it in the octagon.
Yeah.
Yeah, these guys they're going to be good fights. It's not going to be a Darren Till Wonderboy kind of fight. These guys will go for it. So that's going to be exciting for that. You know they're going to put on a show.
The first ever non-title women's featherweight fight. We've got Megan Anderson and Holly Holm. It's a fun one. Anderson's a 2-1 underdog. That should be interesting, too. I think this could be a close fight as well. One thing I will say is that if you do like Anderson, the odds on her to win by decision is like 6 or 7 to 1. So that might be worth a look because it's a 3-round fight. She'll be the bigger
That's pretty
fighter.
Good call. Nice call.
So it might be worth a look if you're interested in that. But I do think Holm has the advantages, but I also think Holm's been disappointing in her UFC.
And she
career,
hasn't got great decisions her way either. Yeah. I mean, decision for Anderson could be good, but I don't see it.
Yeah, I lean Holm, and I think again.
I hope she deserves it. She deserves a good solid win.
Yeah, it's been a while. It really has. I mean, she beat Betch Kohea, which is.
But other than that, she's
really
lost, what, like
win.
Three
she
or four?
Really, she hasn't had a significant win since Rousey.
And she's lost, what, four?
Yeah, so she's beaten Betch. She lost to Cyborg. She lost to Tate. She lost to Durandame. So, four.
Yeah.
She needs a win.
Yeah, definitely. And she's such a good
the crazy
athlete.
Thing is,
she's
like,
an incredible athlete.
She's like the number one
she
contender at featherweight and bantamweight.
Yeah.
Despite all of this. Yeah,
they're all big fights.
Athlete.
They're all losing to the champions and stuff. So it's, well... She's put in big fights. She doesn't just take easy fights.
I just don't understand how she's still considered the number one bantamweight contender. It makes no sense to me. Like, you've got Ketlin Vieira, who's running through opponents, and she's, like, ranked fifth or something or fourth. It makes no... This just does not make any sense.
Like, I don't know much about Anderson. What kind of fight does she bring?
She's just, like, she's powerful. She's big. But from a technical standpoint, she's still a little bit raw. I don't know how much she's improved since she's been in Invicta, but she's a legit featherweight. Like, she's a legit women's featherweight, so she'll have a good size advantage over Holm.
She's got a height advantage over Holm, yeah. And Holm's tall, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So I do think that Holm just has better technical striking all around. I'm not sure what else Anderson will bring to the game other than making it a striking match, but Anderson does have power, so you just never know. Tai Tuivasa, but again, so does Cyborg, and Holm in five rounds with her. Tai Tuivasa, Andre Arlovsky. This is, it seems like it's being, you know, a lamb being fed to slaughter with Arlovsky and Tuivasa, because Tuivasa has just been so good, and he just seems like a real big athlete. It's the kind of thing that Arlovsky doesn't do well against.
Yeah.
Big athletic type guys who hit hard.
I feel they're giving Tai Tuivasa this fight because he needs a big name to propel him into the top.
In the main card.
And it's perfect. Arlovsky's the name to do that, right? Yeah. I think Ty's going to get a knockout probably in the first two rounds.
I agree with you.
I think it's a finish first two rounds, my opinion.
Mm-hmm. So,
but again, Arlovsky has shocked us as well. You know, every time I think he's coming on a two fight win streak.
He beat Struve and he beat Junior Albini.
Yeah, not bad, right? Yeah. So I mean, we both of those guys we thought he was going to get knocked out.
Yeah,
just impressive that such a long.
I didn't think Struve was going to knock him out. I actually liked Arlovsky in that fight.
Really?
Yeah.
I would have thought. I think I went with Struve in that one.
Was it Struve? I think the right fight. I'm pretty sure I am. But who did Arlovsky just... his most recent fight, I'm pretty sure, was
Struve. He had Albini and Struve.
Yeah, okay. Good. Okay, I'm not imagining things.
But before that, he was on a five-fight losing streak.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's bounced back. I mean, when he came back to the UFC, he did well, and then he lost five in a row, and now he's bouncing
back. But even those fives in a row, it's Stipe, Overeem, Barnett, you know, Ngannou, and Tybura. Like, that, they're not bad losses.
Yeah, those are all top guys.
Yeah, so you can't take that, against him, but still. I mean, I don't know how he's still going. That's the most impressive part. 39 years old, not bad. Yeah.
Then you've got Mike Jackson, CM Punk. So we talked a little bit about that earlier. Mike Jackson, a minus 230 favorite against CM Punk. So most people think Mike Jackson's going to win, and I think he's going to win also.
A lot of people are saying
CM Punk's in court this week. He was in court last week. He's in court this week.
For what?
He was being sued for defamation of character, I believe, something along those lines. Okay. Because he was on a podcast, and he was saying some things about the WWE's doctor. And I think he got taken. He got bad timing for a court case. Can you imagine you're in court a week before your big UFC fight? Pay-per-view. Like, fighting for real?
Enough stress now, exactly. You know, to deal with all the pressure on how bad he performed the first time. Yeah that can't be easy.
Nah, can't be good. So I think Mike Jackson probably gets a knockout win probably in the first round.
Really?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Okay, all right.
We'll see how it goes. I might be wrong. Robin thinks CM Punk is a good side to be on.
Yeah,
he
a lot
thinks
of people
that he'll
think.
Be trained. But the thing is, you can't talk about Mike Jackson as if he's not doesn't train like trains with bums. He trains with Derek Lewis. Like, he trains with good guys out in Houston.
And he has, I think, pro boxing experience.
Pro boxing and kickboxing experience. I think he's lost only once in kickboxing and boxing.
That's a huge advantage right
there.
He has
an amateur MMA win. So it's not like he's a bum. He lost to Mickey Gall. There's no, I mean, so does Sage Northcutt.
Yeah. I mean, what does he have? Only a few MMA fights, though?
I think he has two. He has one amateur and one professional against
Gall. And I think, too, there was a joke going on. I think it was on the Anakin Florian podcast. They're saying he was even films MMA. Like, he's a photographer.
Yeah, he's a journalist. He covers the sport. Yeah.
So he covers it, and now he's just jumping into the
UFC.
Well,
last time he fought Mickey Gall, he lost, and then he started. Then he went back and started doing journalist work. Seriously, he was interviewing guys afterwards. Funny.
That's funny.
Mike Jackson's a good guy. I like him. Yeah, I like him as a person. I've hung out with him before. I don't know much about CM Punk as a guy, so I can't say much about him. Curtis Blaydes, Alistair Overeem, Blaydes minus 175.
And Blaydes has been your pick for a while, so.
I have liked Blaydes. I do like Blaydes. I thought that he was going to lose, actually, to Olenek, but he ended up destroying Olenek. His striking had just improved so much, and I just think, apparently, he's just a gym rat now. He went from being a guy who really had to be pushed to train to a guy that's now in the gym all the time. Yeah. But this is not an easy one to call. This is really not an easy one to call.
No, definitely not.
Because Overeem, from a striking standpoint, should have a big advantage. Now, if Blaydes is able to get him down, and again,
that's the question.
This is the
striker
thing.
Versus wrestler, right?
Yeah, but who's Overeem fought that has good wrestling credentials? He fought Stipe, and Stipe took him down and finished him on the ground.
Yeah.
But otherwise, who? Like, if you go back and look at who Overeem's fought.
That's a strong wrestler.
It's a strong wrestler.
Let's see.
You don't have a big sample size.
No, really, because you're looking at Verdum, Ngannou, Hunt, Stipe, like you said. Arlovski, Dos Anjos, Nelson, yeah, Struve, all strikers.
Yeah, and Overeem's got good takedown defense, but when you're talking about a guy who has like good wrestling credentials, good college wrestling credentials, he just like he hasn't fought Cain Velasquez or anything like
maybe
that.
Maybe Fabricio Werdum.
Werdum, yeah, but Werdum kept
that
standing.
That was in 2011, too.
Yeah, Werdum really wanted to keep that one standing. But they had a rematch since then, didn't they? They had a rematch.
Yeah.
And that Overeem won by decision, a controversial
decision.
Yeah,
that decision. Was 2017.
And Werdum took him down in the third round and dominated him on the ground. So I think that Blaydes should be able to win this just with his wrestling, win by decision. And there were pretty long odds on him winning by decision, too, so that's worth a look as well. I think it was like 3 or something to 1.
Yeah, no, I like it.
You've got Mirsad Bektik versus Lamas, and this is another line where I just think it's a little bit too much. I don't know how, like, I think Bektik probably should be favored. Big up-and-comer. But,
really? Over Lamas?
Yeah, but at the same time, like, Lamas is a good fighter. He's been around for a while.
Yeah, Lamas is
good. Things. Yeah. I mean, he lost to Emmett.
Well, you have Bektik's a what? Minus 230 favorite.
Yeah.
So that's surprising.
Yeah, absolutely. But Bektik is like a really high-level wrestler from collegiate wrestling. Very good striker. He had that kind of that loss to Elkins, but let's not forget how the rest of that fight went. There were like 2 10-8 rounds for Bektik before that. So I do think Bektik should be favored in this fight. I just don't know if it should be this long. And I do give him the advantage. If I have to make a pick, I think Bektik will win. Claudia Gadelha versus Carla Esparza. Now, this is an interesting one. You know how I never like to write fighters off, Joe.
Yeah.
This is the biggest favorite on the card is Gadelha. But Esparza is such a high-level wrestler that if she can take Gadelha down, Gadelha's good off her back. She's really good at BJJ. But all Esparza, again, it's a 3-round fight. All Esparza has to do is hang with her on the feet. Gadelha is good on the feet, but not great.
Yeah.
She has bigger power than Esparza for sure. But Esparza is really underrated as a wrestler. And if she can take her down into side control, she has ways to win this fight.
Yeah, her submission game is decent, right?
It's okay, but I mean, I think that she could cruise to a 3-round decision if she's able to get good takedowns, stay out of trouble from top control. I don't think she'd be too worried about climbing into Gadelha's guard. I mean, Gadelha can still do things, but Esparza is a really good grappler. And I think that's her path, is if she can get her down, avoid submissions, she could still win it. She could win 3 rounds or at least 2 out of 3 rounds, no problem.
Yeah, we've seen Esparza be inconsistent at times,
she
too,
has
right?
Been. But she's looked good lately. She's been going back to her wrestling roots and just sticking with wrestling as the game plan. So
I mean,
we'll see.
Gadelha and Andrade are probably close to Rose next, right? And they're probably give her some of the toughest fights,
but
right?
Gadelha got destroyed by Andrade in her last fight. And you don't know what that does to a fighter. Like, she got thoroughly beaten by Andrade. Yeah. So now suddenly she has to come back. And
but Andrade has to be the next title contender.
Oh, for sure.
Right?
Has to be. Yeah. Has to be. But I think that Esparza could win this fight. Like
I 100% agree.
I'm not going to pick her outright, but this kind of spread is crazy for me, I think, this kind of line.
Yeah, I agree.
Rashad Coulter, Chris De La Roca. I just don't think De La Roca's very high level, and I think Coulter's probably the rightful favor here. It's a heavyweight fight. It could go either way. You just get caught, and you'll lose.
I think Coulter
it's one of those situations,
win,
but Coulter should win.
Yeah.
Anthony Smith, Rashad Evans. Rashad Evans, huge underdog in this fight, surprisingly. But is it that surprising? I mean, Rashad Evans hasn't had a win in years.
Yeah. I don't know why he's still going.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what his motivation was. In the last camp, he went and moved in with Mark Henry and trained there, and he still lost. Now he's back in Florida, but I don't know.
What? Still going. He's one of those guys. How old is he? I'm going to check here quickly.
Rashad, I think he's like 34, 35.
That's not that bad.
Yeah, he's not that old, if I recall.
38.
Never mind.
They have him at 38.
38.
Yeah.
Okay, and Anthony Smith is a very good fighter.
Yeah, Anthony Smith is good. He's tough.
He's tough, and he can beat you in a variety of ways. I can see why Smith's favored here, but I wouldn't touch it.
It's just a lot of experience from Smith, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's got 28 wins but 13 losses, you know, most by KO. So I think, in my opinion, he gets maybe a later second, third round finish.
I mean, if Rashad Evans decides he wants to start wrestling again, you never know what's going to happen, right?
That's his thing.
That's what he's done. He's abandoned his wrestling, and that's why he's been losing, in my opinion. Benavidez, Pettis. I just think Benavidez is better everywhere here.
I agree.
I understand why the line is like this, but he's also coming off of a serious injury. Been injured for a year. He announced his injury last May. It was a bad ACL tear. So hopefully Joe can return to form. I love watching Joe Benavidez fight.
Yeah, good. Outside of what? Probably Demetrius Johnson. If Demetrius Johnson wasn't in the picture, he'd probably be your champion, right?
Yeah, I mean, Demetrius has beaten him twice.
Yeah.
And that's the issue with Denovan. He hasn't lost to anybody but Demetrius in the last, like, 4 or 5 years. Yeah. If you look it up, I don't think he's ever lost. He's lost to anybody else. And then when he was at Bantamweight, he didn't lose to anybody but Cruz, I don't think.
And they're really pushing Sergio Pettis, too, now. They're giving him that confidence to give him those bigger names. His last fight was Cejudo, right?
Yeah, it was Cejudo, and he got out-wrestled, and Cejudo was, you know, people booed Cejudo, but he was like, what do you want me to do? I'm not going to stand with Pettis.
But he's doing a great career, because I remember when he first came in, we all thought he was going to be in the shadow of his brother, right? But now he's really shining. He's fighting the top
in
the
division.
He's
a totally different type of fighter, too.
Yeah. No, I like it. I think he's going to do well. I just don't know if he'll ever crack the top. I mean, with those guys.
How old is Sergio? 25? He's still very young.
I'll take a quick check.
And Benavidez is probably 33 or 34 at this point. But, I mean, Pettis is
going to
keep growing. Yeah, he's going to keep growing and growing as a fighter. So, that's the thing. When these guys are young, they just keep making bigger and bigger leaps as they learn more and more. So, who knows? It's still going to be a fun fight, but I just think Benavidez has the advantage everywhere.
Me too.
If he's still the same Benavidez. Charles Oliveira, Clay Guida.
That's a fun fight.
Oliveira takes the fight on 2 weeks' notice as Danny Green steps out. I'd have to lean Charles here. I just think Charles, if it stays standing, I think Charles has the advantage. And if Clay tries taking him down, he's going to get choked out.
Yeah.
So, I just don't see where Clay Guida wins this fight.
Yeah, no.
I mean, Clay's going to have to... This is the thing with Oliveira.
Outwork him and stay close and wrestle him.
Exactly. If Clay can outwork him for a round or two, he'll be able to Oliveira slows down dramatically after the first round and a half.
Crazy Clay's just got to go in there and high energy and just go in there and just try to wrestle. But I can't see it. I think
I don't even think he needs to wrestle. I think he needs to try striking with him, get in the pocket, and start really
wearing him
out with some boxing and close range boxing. Yeah. And then maybe get some takedowns at the end of the round when you're out of trouble. But if he goes for a takedown, he's going to get choked out. I can see it vividly. Oliveira's chokes are so dangerous.
Yeah.
So we'll see. And he's so dangerous off his back. He's probably the most dangerous submission guy off his back and just in general in the entire organization. The problem is he just slows down too much.
64%, submission rate, not
it's
bad.
Crazy. Yeah, it's crazy. He's just so crafty and creative.
And his striking's good too, right?
Yeah.
So...
Well, before we get to our picks, let's get Eddie Alvarez on the show. He's going to be in the headlining UFC Fight Night in Calgary against Dustin Poirier, who was on the show last week. And we always love catching up with Eddie, and he joins us now in the TSN MMA show. I'm now joined by the second half of the main event of UFC Fight Night in Calgary. We spoke to Dustin Poirier recently, and now we've got Eddie Alvarez on the line. Always happy to speak with you, Eddie. How's everything going down in Calgary?
Oh, excellent, man. We are here.
I heard it was a bit of a long trip.
It was a bit of a long trip, but we're here now, enjoying it.
That's good to hear. Did you bring your family along with you?
No, got my buddy Rob with me.
Okay, awesome. Well, hello to Rob. Well, you've decided to bet on yourself for this fight and fight out your contract. Initially, you didn't want to take the fight until you had a new deal worked out. What changed?
I just think we really didn't reach an agreement. I think we're a little bit far away. So rather than postpone things and keep everybody waiting, keep myself waiting, and everybody else is just saying, hey, let's just take a fight. And this is a fight UFC wanted, fans want it, seemed to be the popular vote, so let's have at it.
How risky a proposition do you think it is for you?
It's always a risk. Every fight's a risk, but we're not selling insurance here. You got to be risk averse, and I do well under pressure. I put myself in this situation, and I don't shy away from these kind of things.
It's almost better for you to add more pressure. Like, the more pressure, the better.
It is, because I just know how I perform in the past like this.
When you look at who you fought over the last 7 years, it's really a who's who of the best lightweights. Do you think that you faced a higher level of competition than really anybody else in the sport during that time?
Anybody. You name them. I'd love to argue it. But, be hard-pressed to find someone.
Well, you look at the division, it's just stacked.
Yeah, it's the best of the best have always been in the lightweight division, and I think it'll always be that way.
I mean, over the last 7 years, Max Holloway's fought like 30 guys, but I don't think it's the same level of quality.
Yeah, I just think the best are here, and even if someone has fought sound opponents, I just don't know if they've done it back to back to back the way I do and I'll continue to do.
only 5 losses in your career. Conor McGregor, Donald Cerrone, Michael Chandler, Shinya Aoki. You know, you've avenged 2 of those. And, of course, Nick the Goat Thompson. We'll do a little throwback there. Do you ever think about any of those losses? Is there one in that group that stings more than others?
They all sting. Never want to lose. But, yeah, I'd love to get the Conor fight back. I feel like I had an opportunity to do something great. I was given an opportunity to do something on the largest stage there is in the sport, Madison Square Garden, and I didn't perform. And that's one I'm always going to want back.
With Conor right now, we don't really know what's going on with him. So with that in mind, do you think of this as almost like a number one contendership fight, given that you and Dustin have done so well?
This is definitely number one contender. No one's fighting anymore. I mean, I'd win by default because I'm fighting. No one else wants to.
Do you think you match up favorably with Khabib?
Very, very much. And even way more than anybody else in this division. Nobody else is going to give him a fight in this division the way I will.
I tend to agree with you. When you look at the matchups on paper with Khabib, your skill set really, and even Dustin to an extent, have really the strength that offset his strengths.
It's not just that, the level of competition. I mean, he's done well, and I definitely think he's a great fighter. To be 26-0 in this sport is definitely an incredible feat. But he hasn't exactly fought champion after champion after champion. His resume isn't, the best. He's not fighting the best of the best. He's fighting, whoever he can get his hands on, whoever the UFC is giving him, but it damn sure isn't the best guys in the division.
Well, his best win is probably Rafael Dos Anjos years ago, and, I mean, you made easy work of him as well.
That was years ago before Dos Anjos, became the champion he was.
I mean, we've got him beating Ally Quinta and becoming the undisputed champion. I mean, we had Ferguson as the interim. Conor was the, I guess, disputed champion. But now he's somehow the undisputed champion by beating Ally Quinta. Does that sit well with you? Do you feel like he's the legitimate champion?
No, and he knows it in his heart. He knows that that's a silly belt, that that's a silly thing to claim after beating the number 11th ranked lightweight. It's all very silly. He knows that, He has the belt now, no big deal. The belt is very temporary.
When people say Eddie Alvarez, to me, the name that comes to mind as an adversary is Michael Chandler. Now, he's an impending free agent. Does part of you hope that he signs with the UFC so you can get that trilogy fight?
I think in my career, I've gone beyond the Mike Chandler fight as far as fighting the top guys in the world, but that is very much always an option.
What advice would you give him? Do you think he should sign with the UFC so people don't question whether or not he's fought the best guys?
Oh, yeah, I think he should fight for the UFC.
What changed between, in your life from going from Bellator to the UFC that he might not see that makes it your career and your resume that much stronger?
I just think there's way more eyeballs. Definitely the level of competition is way higher. And even the 15 and 20 ranked guys in the lightweight division are some of the best guys in the whole world. So the level of competition just steps up. There are no easy fights inside the UFC.
It was just over a year ago, you and Dustin Poirier locked horns for the first time. He had you hurt, but eventually, as you usually do, you turned the tables on him towards the end. Do you feel like you were seconds away from finishing him before that unfortunate knee connected?
Yes. He got lucky that I did something stupid. That's what happened.
And I'm guessing it's not going to happen again?
I did something dumb and went and turned it into a no contest when it was almost going to be a knockout on my part. So,
well, the stakes are higher this time around. It's yourself, Dustin Poirier, the rematch. Like you mentioned, and he mentioned to me earlier today, you guys both believe that it's a number one contendership fight. You guys have really gone through it all. And that is July 28th. In Calgary, tickets already on sale to the general public. We appreciate it, and we'll talk to you soon, Eddie.
Thanks, brother.
That was Eddie Alvarez. That should be a fun fight against Dustin Poirier in the main event. Dana White birthday extravaganza. Yeah,
it's going to be fun. Good scrap. Both fighters. Those are like true martial artists and fighters, mm-hmm. so that's what I love to see.
Yeah, it's a big rematch. Stakes much higher this time around, so we'll have to see what happens. I mean, that did you? This is something that I wanted to talk about. Actually, it's a good reminder. So Ariel Helwani came out with a story saying that the initial plan was for the UFC to do kind of a four-man lightweight tournament with Khabib versus Conor and GSP versus Nate Diaz, and that the winner of GSP and Diaz would fight the winner of Conor and GSP. Now, here's the question. Like, so what happened was GSP obviously does not want to fight Nate Diaz.
Yeah.
So this is what I want to ask you. Khabib is targeting GSP. He says Conor needs to wait in line. Why don't you just flip the opponents? Do Khabib versus GSP.
Yeah,
and then you
why
do
not?
Conor versus Nate 3. Make your money on Conor Nate 3.
Yeah.
And as long as you're saying outright the winner of this fight is going to get a title shot.
But maybe Conor's not into that. Maybe that's the problem, right?
Well, why not? Conor would. It's an easier fight for Conor.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
But it locks him down to two fights, basically, right? Does Conor want to be locked down that long?
True.
We don't know.
You never know.
GSP, does GSP want to commit for two
fights?
Would
he swallow
fights?
His pride and say, I'm going to not have a non-title fight?
Yeah. And I think it's hard. I don't think GSP will commit to two fights either. I mean, at this point, you don't really know. He wants super fights.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think, I can't see GSP being involved in that, but I like the concept.
It's a great concept. I think that would be the way to do it. You do GSP versus Khabib.
Yeah.
And GSP commits to fighting. Like, they say to GSP, if you're the champion, you have to fight the winner of Conor and Nate. Because if Nate beats Conor, now suddenly his stock's up again.
Yeah. But, like, again, we also thought GSP might have defended the middleweight title, and then he just gave that
up. I didn't think for a moment he was going to defend the middleweight title.
Right. Fooled me and everybody else.
Yeah, but. I did not think for a moment he was going to be fighting Robert Whittaker. It just makes no sense. It's just from a business standpoint, it makes no sense. And that's what Georgia's all about, is business.
Yeah.
There's no money to be made from fighting Robert Whittaker.
Yeah. I don't know. This one fight, I think one at a time for GSP in his mind. And he don't even know how. He says his colitis is slowly getting better. He doesn't even know.
Yeah, he says he's not ready to commit to fighting.
And then maybe he does this 155, and I don't think he can commit.
Yeah, it's a fun plan, though.
I like it.
I like it.
And it's different, too. Yeah. Why not? I like that whole concept. I don't like fights on the same night.
Yeah.
Because, I mean,
but long-term tournaments.
But I love long-term tournaments. It's exciting. The winner of this fight fights, you know, they're both fight on the same card. The winner's going to meet down, you know, a couple months down the road or... That's fun.
Yeah, they
can
do it
different.
In the lightweight division, too.
It happens in kickboxing all the time. I think when we saw it in the Bellator Heavyweight Grand Prix, it's exciting.
It's
We're all involved in it.
And
it's
these are
really
like
fun.
Over-the-hill guys for the most part.
Yeah.
Whereas if you get the top lightweights in
this,
the sport, now we're talking.
This would be awesome. And this is the division where the controversy is. Who's the best out of those
guys? Here we
guys,
go. So
you got
Poirier, Alvarez, Kevin Lee, Ferguson, Conor.
It's
Khabib,
it's
GSP, Nate Diaz.
It's nuts.
Yeah, it's an embarrassment of riches.
Yeah,
you can probably
nuts.
Find two more names in there that I'm probably just forgetting off the top of my head. You got Felder, you got Iaquinta, you got all these other guys that are just
it's insane.
It's a crazy division. So
the lightweight has always been the division in fighting. I think
I know it's crazy.
Pound for pound. If you look at kickboxing, it was heavyweights and lightweights. And even at UFC now, I mean, it's got to be the lightweights.
Yeah.
What would the other most competitive
featherweight,
division
Featherweight, I think,
be?
Is very competitive, too. Featherweight's getting up there. But,
even in kickboxing,
and even
featherweights
welterweights,
are doing
welterweight's
well.
Picking up also.
In kickboxing, my favorite, with Glory right now, my favorite might be the featherweights. There's so many good guys coming out a little lighter now.
It's happening in the UFC also. You got, like, the Zabits and Yair Rodriguez and Jason
the,
Knight. Who just
what would
lost
you
their,
say the weakest?
Amir Khani.
What would the weakest in the
Probably
UFC
Probably flyweight.
Be?
And heavyweight's pretty weak.
Middleweight?
Flyweight's pretty weak just because there's nobody who can beat Demetrius.
Middleweight now? With
middleweight's
the...
starting to come up again.
Okay, because there was all those changes
like,
happening, right?
Yeah.
With Rockhold leaving, you know,
Bisping's
Yoel.
Retired.
Bisping retired.
Yoel's getting old. Yeah. But you got lots of guys coming
within
up
within a year
now.
Or two, that division could be gone. But
yeah, you got
Adesanya now.
Yeah, you got Eric Anders, Adesanya. Anders. You got Paulo Costa.
Yeah, and even if Adesanya loses to Tavares, that could be some interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there's some guys coming up. That division is starting to reform a little bit because a lot of the older guys are starting to move over. They still have Weidman in the mix. Like, let's not forget about him.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting time in that division, too. And welterweight's getting really stacked, too, with Usman and Till coming up.
Yeah. That's.
So there's a lot going on there.
Yeah.
So last time we both won our picks. I had Claudio Silva at +300.
Yeah.
Look at that.
That's not a bad
big
pick.
Win. Yeah. And you had Makwan Amir Khani, +130.
Yeah, not bad. Moved up a little bit.
So I'm at $124.50, and you're at $89.75. So you're getting closer to even, and I'm doing okay. I'm up there.
Yeah, you're doing. I was down at one point, I think a few weeks ago I caught up. I think I was past you a few weeks ago.
Yeah, and now
back
I flipped
down.
It. So what's your pick for this particular
So I think
card?
I'm going to do a parlay. I'm going to go with Benavidez
okay.
and Charles Oliveira.
Oh, cool. Okay. I like that. Yeah. That should do well.
I think so. That's the plan.
You got one. Oh, actually, Benavidez isn't really Team Alpha Male anymore. Former Team Alpha Male guy and current Team Alpha Male guy losing in Clay Guida, because Guida's Team Alpha Male now. So I too am going with a parlay.
Okay.
With neither of the guys you picked. I'm going with Ty Tuivasa and Mike Jackson as my parlay.
Not bad. Okay.
So yours is probably at a little bit better than even. Yours is probably like plus 130, and mine's at just minus 105. It's pretty close to even.
Yeah.
So there we go. We got two parlays to.
If you had, for the people listening, one underdog to pick, who would you pick? Who would the one underdog pick for us be?
It might be Yoel Romero for me. Yeah, I'd probably go Yoel Romero as my one underdog, surprisingly. The other ones, I don't see a lot of underdogs I like on this card. Lamas
Anderson
a little
beating
bit.
Home.
Esparza, I think, has a ton of value. But if I had to go with one, the one that I think has the best chance to win would probably be Yoel Romero.
If I had to go, you know what? Maybe Alistair Overeem at plus 155 as an underdog. That wouldn't be a bad pick.
I'm not picking against a freight train and blades right now. He's just so young.
But you've called
him
out since, you know, months in advance.
Yeah. It's just a bad matchup for Overeem, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because think of it this way. Blades just fought a much heavier hitter in Mark Hunt.
In Mark Hunt, yeah.
Than Overeem. And Overeem is very technical. And I think Overeem's got a higher fight IQ than Mark Hunt.
Yeah, it stays longer, can use a jab better.
But once Blades started to go with his wrestling against Hunt, it was lights out. Like, Hunt couldn't do anything. And I think the same thing could happen with Overeem.
I think Overeem's a little bit more, like you said, the IQ could be the difference. Yeah. But, I mean, as an underdog, I don't mind it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's
even Lamas. I think I can see Lamas doing well too.
Yeah, Lamas. The interesting thing about Bechtig and Lamas is you're taking a guy who's kind of like a really touted prospect that's shown a lot of good stuff against a guy like Lamas, who's really
a veteran. You know,
Lamas's answer, like Lamas, I think was either an underdog or a small favorite against Jason Knight, and he mopped the floor with Jason Knight.
Yeah. I don't know. I kind of like that Ricardo Lamas as a dog.
You gonna change your pick?
No, no. I'm just saying on the side as an underdog pick. But that would be mine, probably.
Yeah, that's a solid one. And even Guida's got a little bit of value, but
that's my pick.
That's just a tough one. It's just again.
Don't jinx it.
I think
Overeem
has
it.
More ways to
don't
win
jinx
that
my
fight.
Pick with
okay.
Clay Guida.
I won't.
No jinxing.
Yeah, that's. I would have to say Romero, but that's not really one that I'm too.
You're too confident
in. But of the people on this card, that would be, and even Esparza, man, I'm telling you, Esparza, I think might have something there, but. If it stays on the feet for too long, she could get pieced up by Gedalia. Gedalia is a pretty her striking has really improved. So we'll have to see what Esparza's game plan is. You just like you said, Esparza can be a little bit inconsistent. So that'll be it for this week. So what do we got next week? We have a week off. It's Father's Day weekend. What are you doing with Emilio next weekend?
Well, I'm off to Saskatoon.
Right.
I'm hoping my flight
but next weekend. Oh, next. Are you going to Saskatoon this weekend?
This weekend.
Okay.
Father's Day is
the week
this?
After.
It's the week after. Okay, it's the week after. I think we just do a little family barbecue thing. Nothing too crazy.
Yeah.
And your kids are too young to get you gifts. And
no, my son he like draws stuff. And
that's the best gifts.
Yeah, he's almost 80. He always gives me something cool that he makes at school. His teachers get them to make cool Mother's Day and Father's Day gifts.
Yeah. All right. Does your wife get you gifts? Is it like a thing you guys do?
She basically says like, "What do you want to get?" And then I get it.
Nice.
So I'm getting luggage this year.
Nice. I actually need some luggage too.
Yeah,
mine
I'll
cracked.
Tip you off.
Mine cracked this trip. Man, they got
it. I'll tell you where the we'll talk
the
about
deals,
this
the luggage
we'll
deals.
Talk about this off air.
All right, done.
And if anybody else wants some luggage advice in Canada, just let me know.
All right,
I'll
I'm
tip
excited.
You off. All right. So this week feature on CM Punk tonight on SportsCenter on TSN. It's kind of a look at circus fights and special attractions in MMA and how they've always been a part of MMA. UFC 225 coverage all week. I'll be at the open workouts on Wednesday at the Chicago Theater. Media day on Thursday. This is a very interesting media day, Joe. They've got every fighter involved.
Yeah, nice.
They've got the red corner for an hour and the blue corner for an hour. I love it. Lots of guys to talk to.
Are you a guy that'll put your hand up and ask some questions? Are you going to
Media day is one-on-ones.
One-on-ones.
You go and just do one-on-ones. And I think you're going to get one-on-one time with pretty much anybody you want because I don't think there's going to be enough media members to be with each person. There's always going to be someone open. So that'll be cool.
Nice.
Weigh-in coverage on Friday. I'll be down at the weigh-ins, the morning weigh-ins and the ceremonial weigh-ins.
It's a long week for you then, eh?
Yeah, I do it every time.
Nice.
And then fights on Saturday. So you'll see backstage interviews with all the different winners from the card on TSN.ca. And possibly some stuff on SportsCenter. So
yeah, you should get on your Instagram some backstage stuff for us.
I know. I do it sometimes. Yeah, I gotta get into the habit of it.
Yeah.
I've got Hootsuite now, which sends it to all of them.
Yeah, there you go.
UFC 225, the pre-show at 7:30 p.m. Eastern on TSN 5, and the prelims at 8 p.m. Eastern on TSN 5 if you want to catch a really, really stacked prelims card. You can check out Joseph Valtellini on YouTube. Latest video, how to counter the counter.
Yeah, counter the counter.
So let's say I throw a punch at you, you counter it, and then what do I do?
No, it's me hitting you first.
Okay.
You and then you're like, hey, I'm going to counter. But I'm hitting you knowing you're going to counter. So if I know, for example, you have a good counter left hook, what I'm going to do is I want to score points. I just don't want to sit there for a whole fight and wait for someone to throw a punch because I want to score points. I want to attack. I want to look dominant. So you throw a lighter combination, which I call assessment. And then from that, you know they're going to counter. You evade, block, defend, slip, roll that counter shot, and then you counter the counter. So it's an important concept in maintaining momentum and looking good on the scorecard and scoring.
All right. I like it.
Get it. Get on it. Learn. And they're getting good. So, I mean, more people are jumping onto them. And so tell your friends. Learn. It's free.
Become a well-rounded martial artist on YouTube.
That's all you need.
That's it. Bazooka Kickboxing 680 Progress Road. If you if the videos aren't enough for you and you want to fine-tune your craft in person with Joe, you can do that. And Joe just pointed out to me, I showed him a bump I have on my shin.
Yeah.
And I was worried it was like something cancerous or something. No. And Joe's like, no, it's a normal thing when you kick stuff.
And my response was, oh, you got a little bump. Rub it out, kick on it some more.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
What you do. If you kick,
I was worried to go to martial arts yesterday.
If you kick the bag, it's just going to do, because I told you got to rub out that scar tissue and all the building, the blood. So you got to get there and, you know, push it out. But if you kick something, it'll do it for you.
Okay. So I got to just.
Just go for it.
So don't worry about it. All right, cool. I like the sound of that. I was going to book a doctor's appointment tonight before I leave town.
Okay. You're good.
I spoke to Dr. Joe and Dr. Ken yesterday.
Joe's
Ken
good.
Shamrock.
That's funny.
I asked Ken at the top of the interview, are you still the world's most dangerous man? And he laughed and said, no.
No.
I said, you're still in the top 1%. And he was like, okay, I'll
How did
it.
He look? Big?
Looks great.
Strong
Looks
still?
Great. He's like 55 or something.
Yeah.
And he just looks great.
Yeah. I don't know Ken, but I know his brother Frank.
I actually was with Frank a week ago at Mauro Ranallo's documentary screening.
Yeah, Frank, I think, manages Mauro. It's his manager.
He works
does
with
his,
Mauro a lot,
his contract.
Yeah.
He's actually called Glory Fights as well. He was a commentator for Glory, Frank Shamrock.
Oh, back in the day, yes.
Yeah.
I remember
that. So he called some fights for Glory. And then Bazooka Joe came on and took everybody's job.
Yeah, sorry, Frank. All right, well, we'll be back next week with a recap of UFC 225. We won't have a card to preview. That's rare.
Be first.
Yeah.
We can rant about something.
I'm sure there will be lots to talk about after this card. And,
absolutely.
I appreciate you guys joining us. We'll be back next week with the TSN MMA Show.
Thanks for listening to the TSN MMA Show. For all the latest UFC news, visit tsn.ca/UFC.